What if the most dangerous economic problems aren't about money at all, but about something far more human? Consider this. Nearly half of Republicans would feel genuinely unhappy if their child married a Democrat. In 1960, that number was just 5%. We've reached a point where political identity trumps family bonds, where tribal loyalty overrides rational discourse, and where economic debates have devolved into warfare by other means. This isn't just about politics. It's about how we've lost the ability to talk to each other about the issues that matter most: immigration, trade, inequality, automation, climate change. These challenges demand nuanced solutions, yet our conversations have shrunk to tweet-length accusations. Meanwhile, economists, who should help navigate these waters, are trusted by only 25% of people, barely more than politicians and far less than weather forecasters. The discipline meant to illuminate our path forward has become part of the fog. What we need urgently is economics that acknowledges complexity, tests ideas against reality, and admits when ideology must yield to evidence. Immigrants represent just 3% of the global population, unchanged since 1960. Despite cheap flights and instant communication, movement remains rare. Yet public perception vastly overestimates immigrant numbers, with citizens consistently guessing 2-3 times actual levels. Politicians exploit these fears. Marine Le Pen claimed 99% of immigrants were adult males, actual 58%, and that 95% relied on government support. Reality, only 45% weren't working. People don't primarily migrate for opportunity. They flee violence and instability. Iraq, Syria, and Yemen produce more refugees than much poorer nations like Liberia or Mozambique because normal life has collapsed there. As British Somali poet Warsan Shire writes, "No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark." What happens when immigrants arrive surprises most. David Card studied the 1980 Mariel boatlift when 125,000 Cubans suddenly landed in Miami, increasing its labor force by 7% overnight. Economic theory predicted wage collapse. Instead, no negative impact whatsoever. Immigrants increase consumer demand, creating offsetting jobs while performing tasks natives avoid. The real paradox isn't excessive movement, but people's reluctance to relocate despite clear benefits. In Bangladesh, researchers offered cash incentives to villagers to migrate during seasonal hunger. Most refused. Those who did earned substantial income, but often didn't repeat the journey. Migration represents a plunge into uncertainty. The fear of failure looms large because people want to protect their self-image as intelligent and capable. While economists overwhelmingly support free trade, public skepticism runs deep. Only 37% of Americans opposed Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs, compared to 65% of economic experts who strongly disagreed. This disconnect stems from economists' failure to acknowledge trade's complex impacts on real communities. Comparative advantage theory predicts trade increases GDP everywhere and reduces inequality in poor countries. Yet when Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, India, Argentina, Chile, and China opened to trade, inequality consistently increased. The problem? Trade theory assumes resources flow smoothly to productive uses, but labor markets are sticky. People don't move even when economics suggest they should. The China shock devastated specific American regions. Between 1991 to 2013, China's manufacturing export share grew from 2.3% to 18.8%. Workers didn't relocate as theory predicted. They remained jobless in declining communities. Total employment decline often exceeded direct manufacturing losses, as reduced local spending triggered downward spirals. Laid-off workers spend less, housing values collapse, shops close, tax bases erode, infrastructure deteriorates. Trade theorists claimed winners could compensate losers, but this rarely happens. Affected regions received only $58 per adult in transfers for every $549 lost in income. Instead, disability insurance grew significantly, with 1 in 10 displaced workers joining disability roles. The solution isn't protectionism, but robust adjustment assistance. Research shows TIA-retrained workers initially sacrifice $10,000 in earnings, but gain $50,000 more over the next decade. For older workers, subsidize firms in affected regions to maintain employment until retirement eligibility. Since 2016, America's narrative shifted from mistrust of African Americans to rage against immigrants portrayed as existential threats. Paradoxically, states with fewest immigrants show greatest anti-immigrant sentiment. Nearly half of Wyoming and Alabama residents believe immigrants threaten American values, despite rarely encountering any. Discrimination becomes self-reinforcing through self-fulfilling prophecies. Claude Steele's experiments revealed stereotype threat. Black students performed worse on tests labeled as measuring intellectual ability, but not when described as problem solving. Women performed better on math tests when told gender differences didn't apply. Nobel Prize winners Jean Tirole and Roland Benabou developed motivated beliefs. Our beliefs about ourselves are shaped by emotional needs. We avoid information forcing us to confront moral ambiguities, rationalizing negative thoughts about others by blaming them rather than examining our biases. Our opinions often form arbitrarily. Students randomly given mugs or pens valued their items 2 to 3 times higher. More dramatically, students' bids for products were influenced by their social security numbers' last 2 digits. Those with higher numbers bid 200 to 350% more through identical items. People naturally create echo chambers where like-minded individuals reinforce each other's views. A cricket league study in India showed mixed caste teams made more cross-caste friendships and selected teammates by talent. However, competition undermined these benefits. Teams playing against other caste teams formed fewer cross-caste friendships. Between World War II and 1973, the Glorious 30 delivered unprecedented prosperity. U.S. GDP per capita grew 2.5% annually, while France's GDP quadrupled. Then, productivity growth collapsed to a third of its previous rate, despite Silicon Valley's innovations. Economists remain divided on the future. Robert Gordon predicts meager 0.8% annual growth for the next 25 years, while Joel Mokyr envisions bright prospects. Their stark disagreement exposes economists' poor track record in predicting growth. Perhaps it's time to abandon this growth obsession, especially in rich countries where quality of life matters more than getting richer. GDP only values priced, marketed activities. When someone takes leisure time, GDP decreases, though welfare increases. When trees are cut down, GDP counts labor and wood, but ignores lost shade and beauty. Many successes in human welfare come from focusing on specific outcomes rather than growth alone. After malaria deaths peaked at 1.8 million in 2004, they declined 75% by 2016, largely through insecticide-treated bed nets. This exemplifies how focusing on human flourishing rather than abstract growth metrics transforms lives. Kurt Vonnegut's 1952 novel Player Piano envisioned a world where machines rendered most humans jobless, a vision increasingly relevant as AI threatens widespread displacement. McKinsey reports 45% of U.S. jobs face automation risk. Unlike previous technological revolutions, this wave may not create offsetting jobs. Each industrial robot eliminates 6.2 positions with no compensating gains. Most concerning are so-so automation technologies that displace workers without raising productivity, particularly hurting less educated workers. By the 1980s, anxiety over slowing growth prompted Reagan and Thatcher's dramatic shifts. Lower taxes, deregulation, welfare cuts, justified by trickle-down economics. The results contradicted predictions. America's richest 1% saw their income share climb from 8% in 1979 to nearly 24% by 2017, while real wages for the least educated fell 10-20%. Universal Basic Income has gained Silicon Valley support, proposing $1,000 monthly payments to all Americans. But the cost, $3.9 trillion annually, exceeds the entire federal budget. More critically, UBI won't address lost dignity and purpose. 87% say they'd continue working even with guaranteed income. A better approach? Increasing budgets for labor-intensive public services like elder care, education, and childcare, sectors where humans retain advantages, requiring empathy and social skills. Economics assumes constant dynamism. People changing jobs, businesses rising and falling, production shifting globally. Yet reality reveals stickiness everywhere. The Bangladeshi villager starves rather than risk moving to the city. Workers can't afford to follow jobs from Boise to Seattle, nor do they want to abandon their communities. The last 40 years brought remarkable change. Communism's fall, China's rise, global poverty halved, inequality's explosion, and technological revolutions. Good economics gave us free bed nets that cut childhood malaria deaths by half. Bad economics justified tax cuts for the rich while squeezing welfare programs. Markets cannot reliably deliver just or efficient outcomes. Government intervention is necessary in a sticky economy to prevent rich and poor lives from diverging irremediably. Yet only 23% of Americans trust government always or most of the time, a constraint on helping those who need it most. Economics must return to its roots as a moral science, recognizing that people value dignity, community, and meaning alongside prosperity. Your neighbor's seemingly irrational beliefs, the factory worker's resistance to retraining, these aren't logic failures, but expressions of deeply human needs for stability and belonging. Good economics must honor these needs while building pathways toward shared prosperity.